I'm Colm Hill, and you're listening to an Open Water Swimmers podcast.
We're back. Well, I say we, it's just me. I'm delighted to be able to return to this podcast exactly a year on from season one. I finally found the time and the resources to polish off the 12 episodes that make up this season, season two, and I'm really excited to share these chats with you. My name is William Ellis, and for those of you who don't know me, I'm an actor, open water swimmer enthusiast, but I won't bore you with stuff about me because that's not what this podcast is about. Anyway, I have been blown away by the continuing support of the podcast. You know, even when I wasn't releasing any episodes, it kept being listened to. And to date, I think we're up to around 15,000 listens, which, I mean, has far exceeded my expectations. So if you haven't done so already, would you please do me a favor and leave a rating on Apple Podcasts? And make sure you follow OW Swim Pod on Instagram and Twitter for all the latest updates and news, etc. Now, today's guest is one of the founding members of open water swimming in the United Kingdom. He set up Chill Swim in 2013. His large list of swimming achievements include the English Channel, two-way Windermere, and he is one of the fastest ice miles ever swam under his belt. He is widely recognized as the person who brought Olympic 10K marathon swim to London Serpentine for the 2012 Olympics, and for raising the profile of open water swimming as a sport through television and other media. He has been inducted into the International Marathon Swimming Hall of Fame, works closely with FINA and the top athletes competing for a living in open water swimming, and he is basically a living legend of the sport. We recorded this podcast in February 2021 when in full lockdown, and I'm super pleased that we get to open season two with the wonderful Colm Hill. It's my pleasure to welcome Colm Hill. Thank you so much for joining me from rainy Lake District on this grey morning we find ourselves in February. It's such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
My absolute pleasure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, actually. And thanks so much for having me. You've had some great sort of people from the sport of swimming, so it's wonderful to sort of be a part of it all.
So my first question to you is, why do you swim? Now, obviously, this is an open water swimming podcast, so I won't expect you to start necessarily with open water, but it might be, why did you take up swimming and why do you continue to swim? And then I guess, what is it about the open water, if you want to talk about that, that keeps you coming back?
That's a really good question. And it's not something that sort of everyone always explores about why they actually do something. And I was thinking about this morning in the shower, just trying to sort of get my head around it, sort of ready for this sort of question. And it really goes back to my childhood. So like a lot of people, I was a club swimmer. So some of my earliest memories were literally in a swimming club. So I grew up in a place called Consus in the northeast of England. And my mother used to take me swimming pretty much every day as I got older. So yes, yeah, so I went through the whole club scene of just swimming daily, racing weekends. And, you know, so just it was just part of my life for a long time. And then when I got to about sort of 14, 15, I got a bit disillusioned with the whole spending all my time in the swimming pool. You know, the only thing I enjoyed about swimming galas was going on the bus and snogging in the back of the bus with Tracy Jenkins quite often. I seem to remember her name was. And that was kind of my youth was just, you know, swimming. But I love the outdoors, you know, from an early age. And so I then sort of segued into kayaking. At school, my maths teacher was a keen kayaker. And because I was a swimmer, I had big shoulders, big lung capacity, he entered me into a kayak race when I was at school. So I was about 13, which I won the first race. And he said, look, you've got real talent here. You could do really well. So, and then that sort of really got my, you know, I love the outdoors, as I mentioned. So kayaking down white water, slalom kayaking, downriver racing, that really became a big part of my life for quite a few years. And I always kept swimming because swimming was great just to keep myself in shape. But swimming then very much took sort of a back seat. And then university, I got back into swimming. I raced with sort of British students, you know, the university championships. So I really got back into my sort of competitive side. I've also had this sort of real keen competitive streak in me as well. And then after uni, I traveled overseas. I was a whitewater rafting guide, which is sort of living the dream. So I lived in, I've lived in so many amazing places. I spent 6 summer seasons in Austria, 2 years in Nepal. I was in Zimbabwe for a year, Ethiopia. I was a whitewater rafting guide in Ethiopia, which was a 21-day self-support trip down the river. I was in Japan, Ecuador. So I was literally back to back exploring, you know, doing these whitewater rafting adventures and exploring. And I ended up in New Zealand, where I got married and had a child over there. And then I started to do a lot of multi-sport racing over there, which is sort of, it combined my love for kayaking and the outdoors, but also swimming. So you'd swim to an island, you would cycle across, you would kayak, you would run. And then I joined a swimming club over there in New Zealand, you know, and we did a lot of sea swimming. And that really got me, it's kind of that really sort of, it was a eureka moment for me where it was my passion for the outdoors, but also this, you know, this thing, I always just loved swimming. I loved being by myself, which sounds a bit strange. I love the solitude. I can quite happily go in a swimming pool and swim 5K, 10K. And then starting to do that outdoors with a group was just amazing for me. So then eventually, after all this travel and adventure, I moved back to the UK. And then I decided that kayaking in the UK wasn't great. The white water was pretty low most of the time. And then swimming was something that I could still do and really go for. And this was around 1998, 1999. And there wasn't that much open water swimming around then. And I moved up to the Lake District. And so I just started to, because of New Zealand, where you just went and did it, I just started swimming length of lakes. I started doing some swims with the British Long Distance Swim Association back then. And then I that really took me into that, the world of sort of long distance swimming and going from point to point. So that's where I sort of made the segue from being a pool swimmer, bit of a competitive swimmer, to just enjoying the challenge of just going and doing these long swims.
That's lovely.
So that's a really long-winded way to get around to it. But it was I think it's that feeling of adventure and swimming and sort of combining the two. And that's what I really loved. And so after New Zealand, I moved back to the UK and I moved up to the Lake District. Now the Lake District, I mean, I've always had a real fondness for the Lake District. My gap year was at Howtown Outdoor Centre, which is on Ullswater, which happens to be half a mile from where I live now. So it's kind of full circle. But no, I moved to the Lake District and I started just to kind of explore the lakes and swim the length of lakes. It wasn't really done so much then. The British Long Distance Swim Association were great, but they had a sort of a few races a year. But I just started to get a friend who would sort of kayak down the lake with me and I would just swim the length of lakes. And it's something we just always, as I said, it's the appeal of sort of adventure, nature, and also that sort of competitive itch I have. It all sort of combines with open water swimming.
What a great answer.
Yeah, and then it became, sort of became my job after that as well. So I sort of took something I love and made a profession out of it.
Lovely. What a great answer. I have a query. You have this wonderful sense of adventure and versus this idea of solitude where you said that you could, you know, love just head to the pool and swim 5, 10K on your own and get a lot from it. But I've asked this to a lot of people. Can you make the distinction about what it is that is more appealing? Is it the solitude, the idea of just going for a swim on your own, or is it the camaraderie, whether it be Tracy Jenkins in the back of the bus or your friend kayaking, kayaking with you as you swam? What's more important?
Gosh, I'm having to sort of, it's hard because I don't think there's one answer all the time for that because it does change at times, you know, so when I go to the swimming, I mean, people think that you're either an open water swimmer now or a pool swimmer. People are still to make that distinction. And I'm not really from that camp. I mean, I just love swimming. I love swimming. You know, I love the feel of it. I love being in the water. It's all my life I've spent in or on the water, literally. So when I'm at the swimming pool with a good club, and at the moment is Carlisle Aquatics, I swim with the Masters Club there. It's great doing these hard sets. You know, doing these hard sessions, you're in for an hour and a half. And at the end of it, you're tired, but you've done something together and you feel great. It's a real sort of bond there. At the same time, you know, sometimes I go to the lake, I wander down in the morning, 6 o'clock, you know, the mist's on Ullswater, I'm by myself, you know, I ease myself into the water and I just swim along the shoreline. And that's almost a meditative almost. It's, you know, almost spiritual in a way. It's just that case of me, the coolness of the water as I glide into it and I'm just swimming along the shoreline. And then the next time I'm organizing events with thousands of people, you know, and I've got all these people have come along to an event I've organized and experiencing open water. So I, you know, it's in a way swimming can satisfies so many different aspects. So it's hard for me to pinpoint one thing to say it's camaraderie, because it definitely is that. And with winter swimming, when I was working on the Olympics down in London and I was with the Serpentine Swimming Club, and I did my first sort of through the winter swimming every day, the camaraderie you had with the people you met every morning as you're about to go in, you know, that's something really special, you know, really sticks with you. So yeah, different times it can really satisfy different aspects of your life, I think. And that's one of the good things about it.
Yeah, I agree.
So sorry, not one answer, but
no, it's a deliberately ambiguous question that, because of course it's both. But I ask it in a way that hopefully people will not give an answer that's definitive, but they will answer it with their own through line of their experience of both, which is lovely. And you that was such a brilliant answer, because it has to be both, right?
Yeah, and I think I'm lucky where I live in that the Lake District is open access, so you can literally just go for a swim in any lake anytime. There is no restrictions. I think you live in different parts of the country where you're limited to what's around you. I know there's some places where there's a little lake which is used for water sports, and then you can swim at certain set times. And I think now people are sort of looking outside of the box, and I've seen so many pictures of people now, they literally go and sit in a small creek, you know, a little stream. They'll sit in there and they'll find a little patch, what's deep enough for them to get into. And I think now people are really, especially since lockdown, the sport has just exploded. Mm-hmm. And so it used to be when I was back in 1999, if I said I swam long distance, people thought, you know, it was a bit eccentric and a bit strange. And especially swimming in the winter, you know, people thought swimming in the winter was just, you know, mind blowing. Where now, you know, if I say I'm a swimmer, then people say, oh yeah, you know, old Maggie down the street who's 70, she goes to swim in the lake every day, you know. Yeah. It's just changed now where there's so many more people who are just, you know, really embracing the sport.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Where you know, the Instagram feed of any person who enjoys it is full of people, especially in the winter, with a woolly hat on, breaking the ice, jumping in. It's remarkable to see and kind of beautiful that the sport has taken on so many different arenas and avenues now. Colin, what are your earliest memories then of swimming in the open water?
I mean, like everybody, you know, sort of my early things were just swimming in the sea, you know, with the family. Mm. But that's not really, I think when I first started, I think the first time I really started appreciate swimming in the open water was actually New Zealand. So, but that was, you know, I was in my 20s then. I think before then, swimming for me was a competitive sport. It was something I did to compete in. So, but New Zealand was just such an incredible place. You know, it was absolutely magical to swim in the sea, you know, to push out and with a group of swimmers, a big pod, and just to do something which, you know, I'd never really experienced that sort of openness before. Mm. And the freedom, you know, from being in 50 meter pools, 25 meter pools, to suddenly just being free and let off the leash, you know, and sort of, and to realize, and you suddenly start to think of things very differently. You know, it's sort of, you look at bodies of water differently. You look at maps differently. You know, when you're flying into countries, you're looking out the window and looking at everything very, you know, from that point onwards, my whole perspective of terrain and rivers and lakes and seas and, you know, and point to points for swims, you know, that just completely changed. So yeah, so my early memories in the open water, said not so much when I was really young, apart from being at Blackpool and getting jellyfish stings with the family, you know, and I mean, nothing much changed, you know. I mean, it was a couple of years ago I went and swam, you know, from one pier to the other pier in Blackpool, and brought back lots of fun memories being back down there.
That's nice. So I guess then, what does open water swimming mean to you now? This is quite a big question for someone who is such a part of the global open water swimming community. But what does open water swimming mean to you now? And how has it changed then from that young man swimming through jellyfish in Blackpool to Colin Hill, you know, swim consultant for FINA, ChillSwim founder, who's sort of so ensconced in the global community?
Yeah, I think there's a good point when in 2007, 2008, so it was before the Beijing Olympics, I was working for Nova International, and they organize mass running events. So I was in charge of organizing international live cross-country events in Edinburgh. Usain Bolt running down the middle of Manchester on a track. You know, I was in charge of the logistics of getting the track laid down for that one.
Cool.
And at the time, I was still doing my long distance swimming. And I remember Brendan Foster, who was a commentator, former Olympic runner, He owned the company, and he was asking for new ideas for events. And I pitched this idea to him because I just tried to enter a British Long Distance Swim Association race. My check was late and it got sent back to me, so I couldn't enter. It was really old school. It was fantastic. Honestly, I love it so much, that old school of it. But I remember I did this pitch where I said, look, I'm swimming in Elswick Pool in Newcastle. I was swimming there every morning. And I said, those people who swim in the pool, they don't call themselves swimmers. You know, it's just something that they do every morning. And I was saying how, you know, I would go to these swimming events and there'd be 30, 40 people, you know, it was quite low key. And I said, what happens if we took sort of the razzmatazz of the Great North Run and we did a swim event and we tried to make it easy to enter, accessible, wetsuit optional, you know, some of which the British Long Distance Swim Association at the time were very, you know, if you wear neoprene, don't even talk to us sort of thing. I wanted a wetsuit optional event. I wanted to have sort of glitz and glamour. And so the Great North's Brendan said, okay, go and find a location. So I went to Windermere, which I knew really well. And then I come up with this idea called the Great North Swim. And in 2008, there hadn't been an open water event of that scale, easy to access, mass participation. And so it was a complete, I remember some of the directors of the company said, it's not going to work. And we had 2,000 people enter the year one, which was huge. You know, really opened up. After that point, I don't think events were the same again with regards to open water swimming. Triathlon companies suddenly started to do swims. At the first Great North Swim, we had Kerry-Ann Payne with her medal. She helped launch the event. Then she came back with her medal, along with David Davis and Cassie Patton. Mark Foster was there. 2,000 people, most of whom had never swam in open water before, were at that first Great North Swim. And so for me, from that point onwards, swimming just became, you know, just so accessible for people. People suddenly realized that they could do it. It wasn't just David Walliams, you know, swimming across the channel. I think he opened up people's eyes to, you know, what was possible. And then the Great North Swim opened up people that they could actually do it. Mm. And so from that point forwards, you know, swimming for me now, that's what it's about. It's changed the landscape of the sort of people who do it. And in my international travels, the UK is quite unusual in that if you go to America, open water swimming is really still predominantly competitive swimmers who take part in these open water events. The UK, the groundswell of people who just want to go wild swimming, go in for a dip, not do competitive swimming, just go and try it. That is where our strength is in this country. You know, it's the Cageroo outdoor swimming society type swimmer who's just got this ground support now, which there's just this huge base in the UK. We've got sort of a pyramid building up to the elite swimmers. Mm. And the base we have now in this country, it's there's nothing else like it around the world, I don't think. I think the UK is really unique in how all different aspects, all different styles and shapes and abilities have embraced open water swimming. So I'm really proud to have been a part of that from sort of, I feel like one of the old boys now, you know, the old pioneering days, you know, back in my day. But it has, it's changed completely beyond recognition now. As I said, in the Lake District, you know, you can't throw a stick into a lake without hitting a swimmer, it seems. You know, there's swimmers everywhere. And again, back in 1999, you just wouldn't see anybody swimming.
Yeah.
You know, where now there's swimmers all over. There's swimming groups, there's swimming clubs, there's friends who get together and go for a swim, there's swimming camps, it's just the sport itself now, open water swimming, outdoor swimming, swimming in winter swimming. It's fantastic the way it's changed.
Yeah, and obviously COVID and the pandemic has only increased that necessity to be outdoors, to be in nature, and to be exercising in some capacity through the winter. And Kerry-Ann Payne with her straight line swimming and her open water swimming coaching courses, there's more coaches out there, hopefully there's more swimmers. But do you think, that was my question following this, do you think that the correlation of that has increased the amount of people who are learning to swim in this country? Because I think there's two different things here. There's people who are swimming largely, this might be a bit of a sweeping brush statement, who are kind of middle-aged, who are using the open water as a way of exercising. But I wonder if that's actually translating down into more young people learning to swim, because there was a real problem in this country for a long time about actually getting people learning to swim?
Yeah, I think this, I mean, the UK really, there has been a problem, and there's certainly a problem with ethnic minorities learning to swim. Alice Deering, who's hoping to become the first female black swimmer in the Olympic Games. I've interviewed Alice a few times. I've seen her on the World Circus, and she's set up the Black Swimming Association. So she's really trying to promote, you know, swimming for ethnic minorities, which has been a problem, definitely. So there is still work to be done with that. But overall, the UK does pretty well with these sort of the younger groups swimming, you know, sort of people, you know, the kids are supposed to swim 25 meters before they leave school. I know that isn't, even from my time, that seems to have changed. And, you know, the kids go for 1 year and they try and get them to do 25 meters, then that's it. Whereas when I was younger, I was part of the school swimming club, and you know, I was competing for the school, and we seemed to swim for, you know, for a few years, and, you know, going to the pool was seemed to be more of a regular thing. But I think generally, I think that there's always room for improvements. We could do with more pools and better pools, but I think generally the UK is doing okay. What I think has really improved, and I think it's every event I've organized, there's always been more females and males taking part in the events. You know, sometimes it's 60% females to 40% males. I think it's something that has been really positive for, you know, female swimmers. Of, again, of all ages, shapes, sizes, it's not about speed anymore. You can just go and have a nice swim in the lake and get so much from it. And as you said, with lockdown, I think it's encouraged more people just to go down to a lake. And it's quite a quick fix, you know, to you go down, especially in the winter, you know, you can spend 5 minutes in the water, you come out and you feel amazing. You feel like you've done something, you know, it really scratches that itch of that people sort of that connection to nature and that also exercising, the camaraderie that people have built up through lockdown when they've sort of, you know, had to ask people where to go swimming and how to go about it. So I think that, you know, the two things you're talking about there is, you know, has, are people learn to swim more? Is it sort of attracting new people in? I'm not sure, but I think it's certainly getting swathes of people who might have been on the periphery or ignored. I think that's brought them into something, and it's allowed them to call themselves something now. So they can say to people, I'm an open water swimmer. And as I said, when they were just going in the morning and doing their 20 lengths and getting out, they wouldn't necessarily have had any affinity to something and a passion about something. Well, now all these people, they're really passionate about open water swimming. They're very vocal about it. You know, they want to go and even compete in winter swimming events now, you know. So I think it's really, it's just, it's got more participation, more activation for people, which can only be a good thing. So I think that's what open water swimming's really done. It's just attracted more people to become active and to become involved into something.
It's become a brand almost in itself. So open water swimming has always had a degree of fear factor for me, which I always say to people, I guess that's perhaps why it's so addictive. But to what extent might you identify with that? I mean, swimming is be very different swimming in New Zealand, for example, to swimming in Ullswater. And is there a particular story or memory that comes to mind that might sort of suggest that is something that's true for you?
Yeah, I coach here. I take people in open water swimming quite a lot. So people's free about open water swimming. I'm dealing with that on almost a daily basis because, you know, I've got a company, Ullswater Swim Place. I'm taking people, often hotel guests who are staying around Ullswater. I'm taking them in the water for the first time. And, you know, a really common thing is people are scared of fish touching them. You know, they're scared when they can't, you know, when they can't see the bottom, you've got that inky blackness or just the greenness underneath them. So I'm always trying to take away the macho element of open water swimming and just trying to make it fun and relaxed, you know, and, you know, just people swimming head up, breaststroke, chatting away to me as we go for a little swim. So that's something which I'm really conscious of, and I really enjoy getting people out in the open water to overcome their fears, because it's something that you can overcome. If it's a real block for somebody, it's something that they can sort of, you know, become more relaxed with open water and just start to enjoy where they are and the environment they're in, rather than focusing in on their fears. So it's something, you know, I love doing that. It's a real passion of mine to get people past that sort of that fear factor stage. For myself, because I grew up throwing myself down waterfalls, kayaking down the Zambezi, you know, swimming, you know, I've just always been in water. To me is almost part of me. You know, I've literally been in water since I can remember. So the fear factor, I must admit, I've been probably to my detriment is that I've never had that at all. There's nothing I love more than being in water. But I mean, I've had some exciting stories. You know, I did a race in Madeira, which was a 25-kilometer race. And as I was going across there, I was in second place. The guy was in first place. And then a shark came and sideswiped the guy who was leading. And so he got pulled out the water back into the boat. And then like some sort of comedy movie, this fin was coming straight towards me. And my team pulled me out of the water. This shark just disappears and goes into the boat. And then some sort of 15 minutes later, the organizer came along and said, "It's okay. It's a blue shark. It won't kill you. The race can continue." And I was like, "Are you sure? How sure are you that's a blue shark? Why?" Anyway, the guy who was leading, he didn't get back in because this thing just came and sort of hit him. He was like, "No, thanks." And so I managed to win the race, thankfully, from the shark.
That's unbelievable.
You know, so things like that do happen to swimmers. You know, people get horrendous jellyfish things. That's what probably the worst thing I really don't have is a lion's mane wrapped around me. Luckily, I haven't had that before. I've had lots of jellyfish things before when I've been swimming. But, you know, when I'm in the water, I just feel a part of it all. I don't really fear what's happening. I mentioned before about going for a swim by myself, which is an interesting topic, really, because, you know, when I'm teaching people, you know, the thing I always say is don't swim alone. You know, always have somebody else with you. But I do solo swimming. You know, I swim length of lakes by myself, self-support. And it's a risk which I'm sort of aware of, and I sort of take all the precautions I can, but that's something that I've chosen to do. And, you know, for me, my wife will drop me off at the top of Ullswater and I'll have my telephone in a dry bag and off I'll go to swim down the length of the lake.
What do you carry with you in the dry bag?
Okay, so here's I've been changing it around a bit. So my self-support dry bag is currently, I have a Life Straw, which is something which filters water so I can drink straight from the lake.
Wow.
So I don't need to take a water bottle with me and carry lots of water. So a Life Straw, that's pretty cool. And I have a couple of gels with me. And then I've got a pair of socks in case I need to walk out. So I've got something to go on my feet. Yeah. I have a very thin thermal to throw on. And then I have my phone, which is in a separate waterproof bag to make sure that that's okay. And always a little bit of money as well. I don't know why I put a little bit of money in just in case I need to, you know, go to a shop and buy something when I'm halfway down the lake. So that's kind of my little support pack I've got as I'm going down.
That's phenomenal. I've always had this idea in my head that someone is going to swim the channel, in inverted commas, unsupported, in so much as they'll have a pilot boat next to them, but they will be towing all their maxi in a rubber ring, you know, and I think it's probably doable. I imagine someone like Ross Edgerly might say, "I'll do that tomorrow." But do you think that's possible?
Oh, absolutely. I know there's a guy going to do that. He was training for that. He was training up with a sort of, it was a kid sit on top. That's what he was using. And you know, the sit on top little sort of plastic sort of kayaks that you get.
Right, yeah.
So it was a kid's version. So it was quite small. So they got holes in. So anything that goes on top of it just drains out. And yeah, he had his drinks and his, because when you don't drink that much. I mean, my swim took me 10 hours to get across the channel, 10 hours 30. And you can easily carry enough stuff with you, self-support from that point of view.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very achievable. Very achievable. Right.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I've done the length of Windermere self-support with my own. That's fresh water though. So as I said,
you've got your
the drinking straw that works really well in the fresh water. It looks very
incredible.
Weird when people see me, but yeah. So it's perceived risk and actual risk, and also, you know, it's something which I really enjoy doing from time to time, but I never promote it. I never tell people that they should do it. But, you know, from point of view of, you know, having a risk element to open water swimming, that's something which I enjoy doing.
Well, I think you're probably the most safe person to do that with, not just your experience, but I think your hardiness to the elements and everything that comes with it means that it's just a jolly afternoon out for you, really.
It is, but as my wife says, always wear toe float. So if something happens, then they'll get the body back and she'll get the insurance money. So that's what...
I was just taking a mugful of tea there. Well, there you go. Colin, someone once said to me, always remember that the water wants you, which you've kind of alluded to in how much you feel like the water is part of you. But if you could be omnipotent and have like the perfect swim, is that possible? Could you create that? It doesn't have to be a real swim. It can be something imagined in like a kind of holodeck scenario from Star Trek. Is that something that's possible, or it sounds like it doesn't really matter for you?
No, there's some swims which I must admit, this to answer that, there's some swims which I've hated. You know, I remember doing Windermere two-way, and the water temperature was something like 15, and I got in the water. I felt cold from the start. I don't think I was feeling great. And I got through this 10-hour swim, and I was miserable the whole time. You know, so sometimes there's swims which I don't enjoy, you know, but that was an event and I had to do it. So sometimes there's swims which I absolutely love. So I think now as I'm starting to get, you know, I feel like I've done my hard time. You know, I've done swims which I felt like I should do, and I've forced myself to do them, like the Windermere two-way, which was, you know, you swim through the night as well. So you spend 8 hours looking at a glow stick on the side of a boat. That's all you can see as it's dark, you know. So you might as well be, it'd be more fun being in a pool than doing an open water swim.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've proved myself to myself that I can do these hard swims. So now I find myself more and more wanting to do more enjoyable swims. If that makes, you know, so
no, yeah, that
I
makes
don't
sense.
I don't have to put myself through all the hardship to say I've done that now. I feel like, no, Stefan, you know, I want to do something which I enjoy. So with my job with FINA, I go around the world with the elite swimmers and I do the social media aspect. I try and promote the events. I also help out the organizers if they need any help with the organization side of it. So I've been lucky enough to swim in places like the Seychelles. And that was a near perfect swim over the Seychelles. I was swimming along. There was turtles swimming underneath me.
Nice.
The water was clear. The water temperature was 25 degrees. You know, I'm swimming along the shoreline. And at the time, I remember the whole time of thinking, this is absolutely stunning. I am so happy I could do this forever. So I think, you know, there are times where you realize that this is, you know, this is just perfection. And so that's my happy place almost. That's where I can imagine being, is that sort of, you know, those sort of waters, that sort of temperature, that sort of wildlife around me. Absolutely spectacular. And also the other day in the summer, I took all my children swimming. And that was another perfect day where we were in Ullswater. We were swimming around a place called Kailpot where there's a rock you can jump off. And my kids were having the time of their lives. I was loving it because I was doing something with my children, which gives you an extra boost from it all. And so that was another sort of perfect moment, you know. So if I had a holodeck on, I love your analogy, I love Star Trek. So if I had that holodeck, I'd probably have a few playlists I would go back to.
Right.
You know, one would be the one I would press, yep, Seychelles, get me out there with the turtle and the, you know, and the clear water. Another one would be swimming with the kids. I would press that one. It would be messing around and jumping off rocks and having a fun time. So
that's lovely.
Yeah, there are certainly some moments which you just, yeah, you always want to go back to.
Of course, yeah. Let me ask you a bit about FINA. How did you get involved with FINA? That's an amazing and heavily prestigious job.
Yeah, I'm really proud to be part of them. I mean, FINA really started from my work with Great Run. When I was organizing the Great North Swim, I was used to dealing with televised events. So I was dealing with, when I organized, say, the Edinburgh Cross Country, it was, you know, Bikili, it was international race, it was live BBC. I had to organize the event itself and coordinate with BBC and appreciate that sports events are basically theater and it's about a story. And that was something which I became very aware of. So I couldn't be an event organizer, which was saying, you can't film that. I had to work with people to get the best out of the sport. And then the Great North Swim, It was about showcasing the sport. It was about all the different elements to make an event successful. Having Kerri-Ann Payne there, having a kids event there, you know, having a fun warm-up, making sure that was televised, having the press involved, Andy Burnham coming up and having a swim, you know, working with him so he got around and we got promotion from it. Then from when I was working on the Great North Swim, I got basically headhunted to go and work on the Olympic Games in London. And so Charlotte O'Neill asked me if I wanted to join the aquatics team to organize the open water events for London 2012. And I must admit, at the time, people thought I was a bit crazy because before the London Olympics, people often forget, but a lot of negative press about the London Olympics a few years out. People thought it was a waste of money. It wasn't going to be very good. We couldn't follow Beijing, yada, yada. But then once the event happened, it was just the best experience. It was just, and so I couldn't say no. I went down to London. I lived in London for 2 years. I had to put a test event on for the Olympics. And then I was technical operations manager was my title. And I was basically in charge of all the logistics of the swim elements. And the London Olympic open water event was absolutely incredible. You know, everything went well. Well, all the Olympics went well, but that event went really well. Fina were there. I was working with Fina all the way through. A lovely chap called Dennis Miller passed away recently. He was my contact with Fina. And so we spent a lot of time about, you know, not just putting on an event that the officials want, because the officials want one certain thing from an event, but then the television wants something else, and the spectators want something else, and the athletes want something. And it's trying to create something what everybody is going to be happy with, but what's going to showcase the event to help open water swimming grow and marathon swimming grow. And so, you know, I think my passion for that got across. I was, you know, I was really keen on making it the best events it could possibly be. I work with lots of different, you know, sectors whilst doing that. And so Fina sort of, you know, they were pretty impressed, I presume. And also they knew about my event about my past of increasing participation numbers and growing things like the Great North Swim. And they wanted to try and not only have better elite events, but also showcase open water swimming through mass participation events. So they asked me to come along and go to some elite races, speak to the event organizers, talk about having mass events alongside the elite races. And then while I was out there doing that, I'd always video the races myself and I would post things on my YouTube channel. And I would just, you know, after the race, I would interview Kerri-Ann or whoever won the event, little interview, a few highlights, and I would throw it on my YouTube channel. And as it turned out, the event itself wasn't getting that much coverage because the host nation would cover it and Fina might put something out on their channels, but that could often take weeks after all the editing that took place. And I was just throwing stuff up that night. And then Fina started to say, well, hold on, can you throw stuff onto our Facebook page while you're doing that? And, you know, or can you just do the highlight reel again? And so whilst there was always this, you know, 10 cameramen with all their cameras and interviewers, I was there with my phone and a GoPro, and I was starting to produce all the little highlight reels from the finish line because I was right there in the action.
Awesome.
And then the elites got to know me, and so I could chat with them. And during their training, I'd ask them questions about warming up and how they do certain things. And again, so it's just sort of been a really, I don't know, they quite enjoy that aspect of what I bring to the events and just help them to promote the event. So I've been with them now since 2013. And I've been to pretty much every 10K marathon swim event around the world that they organize as part of their World Series. I was out in Rio as well, giving a talk out in Rio. I've been to the World Championships, doing things with them there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been great. It's, you know, it's great to be at that sort of elite element. So, you know, one day I'll be taking swimming in the lake for the very first time. I might be out at a winter swimming event. Then I might be in Abu Dhabi at a Fina events the following week. And so just having that contrast it's just great. It's really good fun.
That sounds brilliant. Really does. So that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. I fully love that idea that you could have two playlists on your holodeck. and flip between the two. How marvelous would that be? So I spoke to you about this before I pressed record. Colin, where was your last swim and how was it?
My last swim. I swim pretty much every day in Ullswater. My house, I'm very lucky, or I work very hard to end up living in the Lake District by Ullswater. So I walk literally down my drive and I get to the lake. So it's there, it's accessible. I love winter swimming. I've been a passionate winter swimming for over a decade now. And so my swim was yesterday. I wandered down, but we had a lot of snow, sleet. I felt really bitterly cold. And sometimes I go for a winter swim, I get in the water, and I get this feeling of indestructibility when I'm in the water. And I absolutely love it. And I just feel so strong. And I get out, get changed, and I feel, yes, I'm awesome. Woohoo, I love it. Yesterday wasn't like that for some reason. I got in the water, and as soon as I was swimming, I was thinking, oh man, this hurts. My hands and feet were hurting straight away. It was I could feel the wind blowing over the water while I was swimming. I only did about 5 minutes. I got out and the wind just hit me straight away. And I got out feeling pretty cold and painful. As I sort of, again, got onto my Crocs, got my dry rubber around me, and sort of ran back up to the house. And yeah, so it just goes to show, different days, just how you feel on a certain day can really change the experience in the water. And that's why you've got to be careful with winter swimming. You shouldn't say to yourself, I'm going to do this every day. Mm. Or set yourself crazy times or distances to do all the time. You just got to go with how you feel on the day. Yeah. If you go in and don't feel good, quick dip and get back out again.
Quite right. How was your ice mile then?
My ice mile. Well, I was the first UK male to do an ice mile. There we go. And that was followed. So I was in Latvia for the World Championships in 2011, I think it was. And I met Ram Barkai out there. And this was before Ice Mile was really a thing. He was just talking about doing it. And I think he might have he'd done a few. And Jackie Coble was the first female doing Ice Mile in this country. And it's funny, at the time, it felt like I was really pushing the envelope because, again, there's nobody else in this country. This male had done one before. Jackie had done one. And I did it in Windermere, a linear mile. And it was pretty tough, but I'd trained up hard for it. I'd already done a few winter seasons. I'd competed in a few world championships. So I felt like I was really ready and prepared for it. So I'd done the homework. I'd done my training. I was doing regular 1K swims. And so the ice mile itself, it went really well. It was pretty straightforward in a way, hard recovery as ever, but, I got through it and felt good. And now it's, there's so many people doing ice miles. Again, it's now changed. What was kind of pushing the envelope becomes more of a norm now, So it's just amazing how the sport has developed, how winter swimming has changed, how doing an ice mile has sort of, has changed how people perceive it. I set an event in 2013 called the Big Chill Swim in Windermere. And that was one of the first cold water swims up in the north. And I had Ram Barkai come across and do an ice mile demo along with Jackie and Jack Bright. And so that was really just trying to promote long distance cold water swimming, and the ice miles. So again, I'm pleased to have been played a little part of promoting winter swimming and getting people into the sport.
You've been instrumental. You've been pivotal in this. I think you're underselling yourself. You've been pivotal in this country in so many aspects of open water, not least winter swimming, but being the founder of Chill Swim has sort of exploded the country into the sport we all love and share. So I'm really grateful that you've shared some of your story with me this morning. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. So I've sort of wandered off on a few of my explanations of things, but with swimming and open water swimming, I don't think anything is straightforward, is it? There's no real one reason why people do it. There's no one reason why it's become as popular as it has. There's not one reason, why people should try it or what actually is open water swimming. It's so many different things for so many different people. So, it's not an easy thing to talk about in a sort of short and succinct manner. So thank you for bearing with me while I waffled on through some of those things. But no, it's been a great pleasure.
That's entirely the point of the podcast, is that, you know, there are no linear answers, and everyone has a different approach to it, because, as you say, everyone has a different relationship to the water. Colin, that was wonderful. Thank you so much again.
Well, thank you very much.
What a fantastic episode. It's so good to be back sharing all these wonderful chats with you. Some of them I recorded a long time ago, some of them I've only just recorded. I hope you enjoyed that as much as me. Thank you again to Colin for taking the time to record that. And I have to thank him also for his patience with me releasing it almost a year after the event. I'll be back next week with another guest. Until then, don't forget to leave a rating on Apple Podcasts and keep following the social media channels for news on any of the episodes. Bye for now. Happy swimming, one and all.